Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I have some very good friends with me today and one that I know you're going to want to welcome back. So let me introduce to you, first of all, Robin Martinez from Smart Patients. Hi, Robin. How are you doing?
Hi, Joyce. Great. How are you?
Good, thanks. So, Robin, today is Patient Solidarity Day. Powerful Patient is a member of the International Alliance of Patient Organizations, which is a global organization primarily based in Europe. One of the things that they're saying about this day is that everybody needs to be aware that we all need to work toward this goal of patient empowerment. Many patients don't feel empowered yet, their statement is that patient empowerment will only be achievable if we as patient advocates, decision makers, policy makers, academics, and industry all work together for globally empowered patients. Power through knowledge. And I know you and I deal with this every day. So tell us what patient empowerment means to you, Robin.
To me, patient empowerment is having all the information that a patient needs to make good decisions on their treatment and on their life. And it involves elements like quality of life, difficulty of treatment, effectiveness of treatment, what the best possible outcome would be, and how likely it is to achieve that. And a lot of times, recent studies have shown that patients don't have the same understanding of what they're going through as far as treatment as the doctors who are giving the treatment. The doctors say, well, you're not going to die from the treatment, but the effectiveness of the treatment, the odds of being cured are maybe 20% or maybe zero. But the treatment isn't going to kill you. The treatment is going to help you live longer. And the patient might think the treatment might kill me, but if I'm lucky, I'll get cured. Well, maybe there's no chance of cure at all. Somehow they've gotten the idea that the treatment is going to cure them. This treatment is more difficult, but it might actually cure me. This treatment is easier, but there's no chance of cure. It's just going to extend my life. Mike, is that you?
Yeah, that should be me.
Yeah, I hear you now. Welcome.
Okay, well, thank you. It's good to be with you, Robin and Joyce. It's good to be with you.
Great. We're very glad to have you here today. And Mike, you've been working with patient empowerment and from a different angle. I know you often deal with people who are at end of life stage, and I've got some pictures rolling by as we're speaking of you playing the guitar and working with people in the hospice. So tell us a little bit about patient empowerment from your perspective.
Well, one of the things that that I deal with quite a lot in those situations is the fact that people are at an end of life situation. The medical people are there, but these people have made a choice to discontinue any further treatments. But they're still empowered to do that. They have to know the things that they can do and they cannot do to be able to enjoy the hospice facilities or take advantage of the hospice facilities. And for a lot of people, they have just simply gotten to the point that they're tired of taking medication and taking any additional treatments. And so, you know, the community is gradually learning that when you get to that point in life where it's not going to be beneficial for your quality of life any longer to do that, you can discontinue treatments, and that's a good thing. And of course, that's empowering. We hate to see it come to that point because all of us are hoping that we have better better treatment for people that have these kind of situations in their life, but sometimes you just run out of medical options.
Well, and my mother passed away in April, and she was 2 months shy of her 100th birthday, and she was just tired. She wasn't sick. She was just end of life, and she chose to exit stage right, and she was in control. The people in the hospice remarked about her and about us as a family that we had all accepted that this was the next step for her and that she wanted to go the way she went. And I think that that, too, is, as you say, is empowering to know that you can play it your way.
Yes, I have a friend that he's now is in an Alzheimer's unit. But years ago, he took care of his wife at home that had Alzheimer's. There wasn't a rest home in this area that he felt comfortable in leaving her with because she would develop bed sores. And he felt that she wasn't being taken care of properly, even though she was getting the standard of care that's out there in most of the rest homes. And so he brought her home, and he took care of her. And the doctor recommended that he give her a feeding tube when she quit eating. Well, he did that. And, of course, that prolonged her life for a number of years. And you know, had he known the consequences of installing that feeding tube, he probably would not have done so at the time because, you know, it just had her in a vegetative state. With no hope of recovery, and there he was feeding her three meals a day. So had he been empowered and understood the consequences of that, he probably wouldn't have done it.
Right, and most of the time, of course, we're dealing with patients who are having some illness, which we hope, sorry, my dog is joining the conversation, which we hope is going to get better. And really helping people to understand the context of what's going on so that they can make a more informed decision. Just as you were saying, if they'd known what was going on and how things were likely to go, then they might have made a different decision. I'll give you one example. My sister just had back surgery, and when she signed up for the back surgery for a spinal stenosis kind of thing, her surgeon said, oh, this is a very simple operation. I mean, it sometimes is even outpatient surgery. You'll only be in the hospital for one day. And I'm going, what's this procedure? And in fact, it was not a one-day thing. Her insurance company insisted that this is reverse of what usually happens, you know. Usually the hospital wants to keep you and an insurance company doesn't want to pay for additional days. But in this case, the doctor was saying, oh, you can go home after one day. And my sister couldn't even go to the bathroom by herself. And the insurance company said, you are staying 3 days, dear. So, yeah, it really helps if the patient is in the conversation, understanding what the doctor intends to do and can say, okay, that sounds good to me. I'll make the necessary arrangements around me so that I can deal with that. And, yes, that's what I want to do with my life. And, Robin, I know you deal with situations like this.
Yes,
tell us
we're
about
always
it.
Dealing with difficult treatment choices, and when the more people understand about what the treatment choices are actually going to mean in day-to-day terms, really, really helps them make decisions that fit their lives and their lifestyle and their family. And sometimes they find treatment options that they had no idea existed, and maybe their doctor didn't even know it existed. Just by doing some research, by talking to other patients, by finding out what the current state of treatment is, by looking at clinical trials, by considering going to a different doctor or getting an expert second opinion. There's all sorts of things that most patients don't do because they just go to their doctor, listen to what the doctor says, either do or don't, and that's it. They don't push for more. And we've found it really does help to push for more.
Right, and sometimes we as patients don't even quite fully understand what the doctor is saying. And at that point, you have a choice. You can either just sort of nod your head and say, yes, sir, doctor, whatever you say. Or you can say, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that. Could you run that by me one more time? And that's
right.
The legitimate thing to do. Go ahead.
Could you spell that for me and explain what that means? And then go home and look it up and see if you have the right understanding or not.
And I ran across an article that came out in Cure magazine, Cure Today magazine, just recently. And it stated that they're finding out that between 20 and 25% of all cancer patients suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now, we don't realize that people have that kind of impact on them psychologically. We don't think about a cancer patient as just becoming debilitated as a person that's been in a combat situation. But just imagine 20 to 25% of the people out there dealing with cancer have this stress syndrome going on, and they need to take care of that, but they're not aware of it.
Right, and often
right.
Their families and their healthcare professionals also don't understand it either. Go ahead, Raman.
It seems normal to them. I was just reading an article about psycho-oncology that there are some places where distress care is built into the system, and they've decided that distress is a good word because it doesn't make it sound as though you're crazy, but you are having psychological distress because of all the things that are happening to you at once. Maybe you don't have anyone to leave the kids with. Maybe it's hard to get to your treatment every day. Maybe you have daily treatment and you can't get there every day. Or they tell you not to drive, but you don't have a driver.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need specialized care at home that you just don't have. And there's all these different things going on that can cause such high amounts of stress in patients' lives. And the doctor rarely sees this because doctors aren't trained to ask about it. And, of course, they have the traditional 15-minute appointment in which to cover your entire life, every going on, your treatment, your symptoms, your side effects. If they don't get to your financial situation or your stress level, that's pretty normal. And you need to have an outlet where you can get that kind of care that you need.
Exactly right. And this is where your family, your community becomes so important, because you do need to focus on your illness and make sure that you're getting the right care and doing the right thing. And that means that somebody else needs to fix dinner and somebody else needs to take care of the children and drive you. And this is where when people say, oh, what can I do to help? Don't say, oh, that's all right, thank you, I'm all set. No, you're not all set. You make a list of the things that somebody else could do to supplement what you're able to do to really keep things happening.
Right, and there's even a website, I can't remember the name of it right off the bat, where you can go and set up a task list. I need someone to mow the lawn. I need someone to make Sunday night dinner. I need someone to drive me on Thursday at 10 in the morning to X place to get a treatment and to stay with me until 11 and drive me home, make sure everything goes all right. I need this, I need that. And you can make an entire list, and then your friends can go to the website and say, oh, I could do that. That wouldn't be any trouble. I could pick the kids up from school that day, whatever it is. It's just amazing the options that we have available now as internet citizens that weren't available before, and we need to know about them so that people can take advantage of them.
Yeah, there are all kinds of resources out there available for patients that so many times the patient is not aware of. There's all kinds of financial assistance programs, not only through the pharmaceutical companies, but there are other organizations that are being established that can help with transportation and with babysitting costs and all of these other auxiliary expenses that's not covered with your insurance company, and that's not covered under any kind of plans or anything. But people are not aware of those, and so they're so often, like you say, they're going lacking because of those things.
Yeah, PTSD is an insidious thing. It stands for post-traumatic stress syndrome, and sort of after a trauma, whatever trauma it may be, there's a certain repercussion that we're often not fully aware of. And one of the things that can cause that kind of trauma is a cancer diagnosis. You get told all of a sudden that you may be facing some threat to your very life, and that's pretty traumatic. So the way you respond to that and what it's going to do to your ability to focus on anything else is going to be fairly impactful, and you need to be open to understand that about yourself and to discuss it with your doctor, with your family, with your support system.
Expressing needs is a really difficult thing for so many people. To be able to learn to just ask the questions and say, how can I possibly pay for that? And finding the right person to ask that question to so that you can get information on, yes, there is babysitting available. Yes, there is social services available. Yes, there is financial help available. But if you can't find it, it's no good to you.
And how much does the pride factor come into play in these situations where we're reluctant to say, okay, I need somebody to take me to an appointment next Thursday. I need somebody to come in and cook supper for me Sunday night, or I need somebody to bring a meal over for us to eat and enjoy. How often does pride come into that where we say, oh, I'm not going to ask anybody to help me on that?
Robin, how does this come up in conversations on smart patients?
That's a really good point. I think a lot of people have friends who say, let me know if there's anything I can do. And then when it comes to asking for a specific thing that this person can do, like, well, could you come over on Sunday? Could you drive me on Thursday? Whatever it is, it's really hard for people to ask for that specific thing. And I don't know if it's pride or just hating to put other people on the spot. There's so much that goes into it. I did find that website, by the way. One of them is called carecalendar.org. And you can post your calendar to your online community and say, you know, as we said, Sunday night we need dinner. Thursday I need to be driven to an appointment. And people can sign up to help you. And for some reason, that's a little easier than just asking Fred to pick you up on Thursday and drive you.
Right. And my experience with it, too, is that when somebody says, you know, is there anything I can do to help? then your mind goes blank and you can't think of anything, which is why I remember reading once an article where it said, make a list. Just when you're quiet and you're thinking about what needs to get done, just make a little list and keep it near the telephone so that when somebody says that to you, you can say, well, as a matter of fact, you know, Thursday I've got a doctor's appointment. He says it's at 2 o'clock, but knowing him, it'll run late. Could you maybe fix dinner for my family that night? You know, that kind of thing. Because when you're on the spot, we don't always think about it. Your brain gets so full of all this stuff you need to do that it's kind of hard to keep things straight. And I know after my husband died, I remember reading a book where it said, just assume that for the first 2 years you are mildly crazy. Nothing clinical, you understand, but try not to make major decisions. And after 2 years, I looked back and I went, you know what? She was right. So this is one of those situations where you're mildly crazy, nothing clinical, but realize that you're not thinking on all four burners, and that your primary task in a situation like this is to get yourself well, and somebody else needs to help you, and you need to acknowledge the fact that you need that help and be willing to put it out there, and you'll be amazed. Your friends will be wonderful, and they'll pitch in and help you out, but you do need to be clear on what you need.
Yes, and when your lawn needs mowing, don't hesitate to say it.
Yeah, right.
It's funny how, as you said, we have so many needs that we can't even comprehend them all at once. And making a list of them, writing them down, and having them available when someone says, what can I do to help, is a great idea. And now that most of us have smartphones, make a list on your smartphone. Carry it around with you.
Yeah. Mike, I wanted to ask you, too, about some of the wonderful things that you've been up to. I read your terrific article in Cancer Today that talks about Mike and his wonderful things, and you're just embarking on a new venture with a new organization called KC Cure. You want to talk with us a little about that?
Well, it's something that we're really excited about. KC Cure is a relatively new organization, and it was formed because there seemed to be a vacuum in being able to raise and get money into the research pipeline for funding for research projects. Some of the organizations out there have accumulated all kinds of assets, and it seems like they're not turning those assets loose to be allowing them to be dedicated to cancer research. They may have some token awards, but they're not doing that. And a lot of your cancer organizations, it seems like they're more interested in building buildings and putting their signs up on buildings and building an infrastructure for themselves instead of getting the money out to where it's needed. So KC Cure was founded about a year and a half ago, and in their first year they raised $100,000 and put every bit of it into cancer research. So they funded some real significant research projects. So I'm working with them and with some other tremendous people that's on the staff there at KC Cure and also that's some volunteers. And we're putting together a patient advocacy group to help to advise KC Cure on how to get additional funding and on how to review the grants and just to be a spokesperson for KC Cure. So that's an exciting opportunity that we're participating in, Joyce.
Sounds great. And we did interview Gina Battle a few months back, so and I'll put the link in there to that one as well so people can see, can listen to Dina talking about the goals of the organization. But I agree, and this is a group of friends that all have a very keen interest in kidney cancer. So we know Dina and have a great deal of respect for her as well.
And you've also interviewed Deborah Gosblatten,
who is
co-chair of that. So put her link on that too, because I told her, I said we need to do an interview together on smart patients, and she said, oh, they've already had, I mean, on powerful patients. She says, oh, they've already got me on there. I said, okay, so that's fine. We'll do that.
That's great.
You guys do a good job on that, I'll tell you. You know, the other thing that I deal with quite a lot are people that's in rest homes. And I run into situations with those where the patients and the family members aren't as empowered as they need to be, because I frequently encounter people that the doctor there that's on the staff has issued some medication and it's not working properly. Maybe they've got three or four medications and something is not acting and cooperating well with some of the other medications. And it's actually causing the resident a lot of difficulty. And there's not a good line of communication a lot of times between the family members and the medical people that's taking care of their loved ones that's in those facilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's an area that needs to be addressed. You know, I see that quite a lot. I'll go in to do a program, you know, at a home, and they'll tell me, oh, I'm just feeling bad. They've changed my medication and it's just not working right. And you know, and I say, well, have you told your family member? Yeah, but they hadn't been able to get in touch with the doctor. You know, so those are areas that we really need to figure out ways to address better if we've got someone that's in that we're taking care of that's in a facility like that.
Right, and that goes for at home, too. I mean, the doctor sees you, recommends this prescription, you fill the prescription, you take it home. But the real bottom line is, how is it working for you? Does it make you feel better? Does it make you feel worse? Are you having a bad reaction? And you're the person who knows that the best. The doctor doesn't know that unless you tell them.
Yeah, and too often patients forget that. They just say, oh, this isn't working. The doctor can't help me, rather than this isn't working. I should tell the doctor.
Right.
And Robin, I know you run into this a lot on smart patients, that people are taking a treatment of some kind and they have side effects and they're not communicating with their medical team about the adverse side effects that they're having, so they're not getting any relief from that, and they're asking they're asking the people that's on your group there what to do about it, and just about everybody says talk to your doctor and tell them about this.
Right, and often the person that you need to talk to if you're in cancer treatment might be the oncology nurse, because that person might be the person who is dealing with a lot of patients who are facing side effects and helping them find effective treatments for the side effects. But the first step is that patients often think, well, this goes with the treatment. You just have to suffer through it. Then after a certain period of suffering, either they say, I can't take this any longer, or they say, maybe there's something that can be done about it. But like with nausea medication, there's all kinds of prescribed nausea medications, and they routinely start with one that's fairly common and fairly harmless and fairly inexpensive, and then if that doesn't work for you, that's fine. You have to tell them, that's not working for me. Well, let's add this, or let's change to this, or let's have you tried adding, you know, peppermint candies? Have you tried ginger? Have you tried? There's all kinds of home remedies that you can use for nausea. There's different forms of medication. There's one kind of medication that people normally swallow But if you get the formulation that dissolves under your tongue, most people say, oh, that one worked twice as well for me. And it's just a minor change in the prescription. But if you don't ask, you don't get it.
That's right. And not only do the oncology nurses have a lot of good tricks up their sleeve, that's important to know. But the other thing is that with some of these new medications, you need to report as quickly as possible what side effects you're experiencing, because some of them, they need to get acted upon very early in the process. And the longer you wait, the more difficult it gets to deal with it.
Yes, yes. And I thought we had repeated that message over and over and over on smart patients, and we still had somebody come in and say, you know, I thought I could just tuss it out, and I ended up with diabetes because of it. And it'll never go away now. If it had been treated right away, the reaction that was acting on the pancreas might have been able to be stopped. But they thought, oh, you know, it's nothing important, and they didn't realize how important it is to report this immediately to the doctor.
And especially with the new immunotherapies that are out there, that more and more people in all cancer types are starting to have available for their treatment. The immunotherapies are going to do a lot of different things that chemotherapy and radiation and the other oral medications that we've had traditionally, it'll do a lot more to your body than the doctors recognize if they're starting these new drugs and are just getting into this situation.
That's right. It's a whole new class of drugs with a different kind of activity. And so don't just ask your friend who recently went through chemotherapy what she did. That's not the point. You need somebody who understands this drug as well as the side effects. So that's why starting with that nurse is the very best thing you can do. Start with your own team. Even going to the ER can be a mistake if you're on one of the new immunotherapy drugs, because the action is so different from classical chemotherapy.
You know, I was on an immunotherapy drug for a while, and one of the things that the oncology nurse gave me before my first infusion was a little pocket card to put in my billfold. And if I had to go to the emergency room for anything, I gave them that card. Because it had instructions on who to call and what kind of information they needed to have, because I was on that treatment. But, you know, this is not only true for cancer medicines, you know, and for people that's
right.
dealing with cancer. It's for people with all kinds of diseases. Any kind of medicine that you're taking has some side effects out there, and you need to be aware of those things and letting your doctor know what's going on. It doesn't matter what kind of condition you're being treated for.
And I think this is the bottom line for what we're trying to say here, is that patient empowerment to me means being a partner with your doctor, seeing your doctor as your partner, and having your doctor see you as an active part of the healthcare team for you, because whatever they ask you to do, you need to understand why, you need to be willing to do it, you need to carry through, and you need to communicate back how well it worked or didn't work. And it's only through that loop, that communication loop, that you're really going to get better.
That's
a good
right.
point.
Being part of a team and realizing when it comes down to it, you're actually the captain of the team, because you're the one who can say, wait, hold it. Nope, we're not doing that. Or I want to go this way. And the doctor can suggest to you, but the doctor is not ordering you. You're paying for the doctor. You're the one who gets to make the decision.
That's right. They bring their experience, their expertise, their knowledge of the drugs or the condition that you have, and they make their best recommendation based on that sort of academic background. You are the one who has to decide whether or not that works for you in your situation, in your point in your life, and whether that's the choice that you want to agree to. So
right.
Be
and another
powerful
thing,
patient.
another part of being an empowered patient is to know about and get second and third opinions. Don't think, oh, I'll hurt my doctor's feelings if I don't do what he says. You need to get input from two or three sources to make sure. It's like if you went to buy a car and the guy says, I think this is the car for you. Do you immediately say, yes, okay, I'll buy that car? No, you go to different dealers, you go to different places, you talk to different people, you get a variety of inputs, and then you say, based on my needs and my situation and my life, I think this one fits me best. The same is true with doctors. And it's not doctor shopping, it's gathering information.
That's a really good analogy, Robin. I remember one time I didn't buy a car because there was no place to put my toys, you know. I had a long drive, and I wanted to have certain things around me, and there was no place for me to put them. So I looked, and I found a different car. It wasn't that it was a bad car. It was just not the right car for me.
Right. Sometimes there can be something as minor as where is the cup holder. That,
exactly.
You know. This isn't the right car for me because I can't have my coffee where I want it. The same with a doctor. You know, this treatment is going to make me come to the treatment center every week, and the treatment center is 100 miles away. That's pretty difficult. Maybe there's a better choice. And maybe there is and maybe there isn't. Maybe you're just going to have to bite the bullet and drive 100 miles or relocate or something. But sometimes you find, oh, we can do that. We can do it every 2 weeks instead. And you've cut your travel in half. There are lots of things that don't occur to people unless, you know, if you ask the medical professionals, they'll say, oh, if you want it, we can do it this way.
Yeah, they have a standard answer that they usually give out. And when a person has a special need, they don't take that into consideration. And I know we've already covered that with all kinds of situations with insurance and preferences and everything, but we need to be mindful of that when we're sitting in that doctor's office, that a lot of times the procedure can be modified to fit our schedule. I have gotten to the point that if they offer me an appointment and it doesn't fit conveniently with what I need to do, I refuse it and say, no, what else have you got? And they can usually work something out real good with me.
Great. Well, thank you both very much. This has been a great conversation, as always. We're glad for both of you and the good service that you provide to so many people. And just wanted to remind all of our listeners that we're very grateful to them for joining us today as well. And I hope that you get some good benefit out of this broadcast. And in addition to that, please don't feel at all shy to take advantage of our various services. So Mike is working primarily in North Carolina, but also with KC Cure around the world, around the U.S. of A. Robin and I work with people over the telephone. Robin's at Smart Patients on the Internet. And so you can reach out to us any way that you want to, at Powerful Patient or at one of our other organizations. And we hope that you'll join us again next time. Mike and I and Robin are going to be putting some more broadcasts together on a more regular basis than we have for the last 6 or 9 months. But we all have busy schedules, but together, I think you can see that we try to cover subjects of interest to people who are dealing with complex medical situations, hoping to give you a few little insights into what might be helpful in your own life. So thanks again. Anybody else with closing comments that you'd like to make?
Be a powerful patient.
That's great. Mike?
Well, thank you both for letting me be with you again on this wonderful website and with this great series. I'm glad to be a part of it again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. And thanks
we're
to
so
everybody
glad to have
for
you.
Being with us. We're looking forward to another good time with you very soon. And meanwhile, be a powerful patient. Take good care.
You've reached the Holly A helpline. We turn the holidays into Holly A's.
Hi, I want to surprise my wife and kids with some super stylish gifts.
Surprise! With all the velvet and sparkly styles you'll find at Old Navy, it's your time to shine.
Old Navy?
Yep, the entire store is up to 60% off right now.
Up to 60% off?
And women's dresses start at just $15, 12 for girls, with tops from $6 for adults, 5 for kids at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
No surprise here. I'm going to Old Navy.
Turn your holiday into a Holly A. Get to Old Navy today.
Valid 12/6 to 12/12. Excludes in-store clearance, gift cards, register lane, items today only, and two-day only deals.
Do you suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin. Caffeine, not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in increased productivity and decreased dread in setting alarms. Unexpected enjoyment of the graveyard shift has been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may be a better budget option than drinking coffee. It may also decrease the urge to doze off, skip work, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12.